Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Episode Forward Thinkers. Mein Name ist Daniel Fürk und ich melde mich heute aus Helsinki vom Nordic Business Forum. Ich treffe mich hier mit Sanna Suvanto-Harse. Sie wurde 6-mal in Folge als einflussreichste Frau der finnischen Wirtschaft ausgezeichnet und außerdem zur Chairwoman des Jahres in Dänemark gewählt. Sie steht an der Spitze der Aufsichtsräte von Finnair, Ortex, der Posti Group, Book Concept und der TCM Group. Sie gilt als Expertin für die Effektivität von Führungsteams und inspiriert mit ihrem Wissen und ihrer Erfahrung Führungskräfte weltweit. Ich habe direkt nach ihrem Auftritt auf der Bühne mit ihr gesprochen, über Leadership, über Transformation und die Bewältigung von Krisen. Viel Spaß beim Zuhören.
In an ever-changing world, we need to keep track of what will be next. Forward Thinkers is your 48 Forward podcast to discover the future. We are talking to innovative and creative minds from all over the world to learn more about what they are working on and what they think will change the way we work and live within the next decade. Are you ready to join the ride? Welcome to Forward Thinkers.
Sanna, thank you so much for taking the time to meet me here at Nordic Business Forum. You just came from your talk on stage.
Yes.
And I wanted to talk about those topics you talked about on stage a little bit more. But first of all, because we had a talk in our little group that came here from Germany last night, and we talked a lot about pessimism and optimism and the economy. And in Germany, we are very good at pessimism.
Finns as well. That's what we have common.
Okay, because then I was about to ask, what do you think? What's the current state of emotion here in Finland and in the Nordics in general?
Finland's, it's a very big difference from country to country in the Nordics. And let me stay with this one. German has always, for me, been the engine of the Europe. And usually the engine has been, a bit pessimistic, but it's been moving forward. It's been going okay. And, you know, it hasn't had a bit down dips And you were the guys who gained most of the euro because of a good currency and things like that. And I'm actually quite worried about the German current situation. Luckily, you have no unemployment because you're running out of people like everybody else. But I think that the thing is this one. It's really funny because I live in Copenhagen. So I'm kind of in that sense, in the last 20 years, I'm half Dane. And then I spend a lot of time in Finland because I work with a lot of companies here. And I say that the Danes are like this way. Oh, it's really going badly. Let's take a glass of wine and drink a glass of wine because it's going badly. Next day, it's going really well. Let's drink a glass of red wine because it's going well. So the Danes are always the assuming that tomorrow, in generalization, that tomorrow is positive. The Finns always think, it's like the Asterix and Obelix where the sky is kind of falling on your heads type of thing on Finns. So Finns always focus what's going badly. And none of these are good because they are the two extremes. And then if you put them in the middle, Swedes usually are very conceptual. And usually Sweden at the moment, the big issue is that they have this whole unrest on the country. You know, economically doing fine, but the unrest is questioning who they are. You know, they used to be the good guys and now they're like the Chicago of Europe. And the Norwegians, they have their old dollars. They could all go to pension tomorrow and everything would be fine. So I think it's a very difficult question. But I think if I stay with the Finns and the Germans, who are a bit in the same camp at the moment, I think it's a lot about, there's this prudency about trying to make the best possible. But then we just kind of focus, we should, it's good to focus to improve things, as I also didn't talk. But you also have to look what's working. And the Finns and the Germans sometimes lack the balance. The Danes are in the other place when, and then they fall in the, because they don't see it coming because they're not afraid. But you have to have this balance. And if you dig yourself, then you don't see the flowers. You know, you dig yourself in the sandy pit and then there's this beautiful flower you don't see. So it's a bit on that one. There is no everything is bad and everything is good. You just have to refocus and saying, that's not good. We have to fix that area. That is actually good. So let's raise it up because everybody needs hope. If you just are in the darkness, you will never get out of the darkness because you just lost hope. So I think the Germans and the Finns on that sense, back on the Hansa Nations where we had a lot of trading and a lot of things on that one, I think we need to find the balance. We're not very good. We kind of, very have this melancholia in our countries, very different ways, but we have that one. And it requires people like you and the organization to also say, yes, it might not be generally great, but look at this one, that's working. And And Germany specifically has these Mittelstand companies, which are brilliant. Yes, those with the car industry at the moment are not brilliant. But you have a lot of small companies who don't want to make a name of themselves. So sorry, a very long answer to your very short question, but I went a bit sideways. But it's all about trying to have the balance. And I think people who are true leaders manage to have the balance. And if you're then working in the company when things are bad, there's a lot of good energy on things being bad. I always say never waste a good crisis. My CEOs are completely sick and tired of me on that one. When they call me and say, customer left us. Whoa, great. How do we use this? And it sounds a bit stupid, but there is energy on bad things and there's energy on good things. But you just have to transition the energy to the best of the company and the best of the in the country in that sense.
You just talked a lot about leadership and yes, leadership personalities. So I would say you've seen a lot and yes, you're seeing a lot. Yeah. You've got deep insights into various companies across different industries. And I've seen a lot of, value leaflets and marketing campaigns over all those years, what needs to change and how we need to adjust our way of leadership, our corporate culture. With all your experience, would you say there is actually a change happening for the better in those companies and when it comes to leadership characters, leadership personalities?
I think what I do like a lot is the bit younger, a bit younger leadership. What I find extremely interesting is when I get the CEOs, which are in their early 40s, and I have a couple of them, for them, it is natural they have a coach. They have maybe a mentor, a business kind of business, one which is just coaching them as a person. But so they see themselves, if you think about sportman or woman, they never think they can do it themselves. They have nutritions, they have this and they have that and they have whatever. And the younger leaders, whereas if you look at these 60 pluses where I'm getting close to, but if I look at that leadership team, it's all about, I'm perfect, I'm now the CEO, I know all the answers. And they don't. And the issue is that today's world, you have even less answers because it's moving so quickly. So the younger generations would automatically look outside and look for help to be bit leaders, have a huge advantage. But the thing is, the old leaders still sit there. And, in the Mittelstand, the owners might be even older, 70 pluses or whatever. And that is a struggle because then the younger generation doesn't have the trust on that generation. Yes, values do eat strategy for breakfast, but I gave a speech earlier this morning on a closed session about purpose. I'm a big believer of purpose. A purpose like Simon Scheich said would be like, why is your company here? What's the role your company is fulfilling in the society? And I have come to the point that I think that sometimes is more important than values because all the employees are looking. So this whole thing about, let's call it sustainable leadership. They want to understand what's the good. Why am I working? Just saying somebody, you're working here and here's the line. But what's all about it? What am I doing for the better of the world? So I think purpose has a lot of that aspects. And then purpose-based values, that you have a purpose and values that go in there. That's one thing. And then there is a very simple thing, which I think I find Germans must be struggling even more in my experience when I lived there, is the fact that we have to start to look everybody as a colleagues. There's a lot about this, how many stripes I have. I remember when I was in Germany. Luckily, I have a so dreadful last name, so they had to call me Frau Sanna. And that was great because then I got this exception being Frau Sanna, which was superb because it kind of was last name, everybody could say it. But I think that Germany is there even more old-fashioned. So Germany, in that sense, if I would say, and again, because the Mittelstand is so strong, which means you have relatively older leaders because the families are involved, it will take, in Scandinavia, I can see the change now. Now everybody starts to be 50s and they start to get more of this, we're a team. Even I have a team help to become a better CEO. Germany is not there at all yet. Of course, there's an exception for the rules. But that's what we need to be. The world is too complex. And the board plays a role in that one. I sometimes tell my management, listen, you have this board of directors. They are underpaid advisors. Misuse them, type of thing. So you need to look for that one. But if you say, I now have my stripes, I'm ready, I know all the answers, you're doomed to death. Very often a slow, painful death of the company or, just getting worse and smaller. But it is a new world there. And nobody is good at themselves. That's the big thing on that one.
I always say we kind of need to get rid, at least a little bit, we need to get rid of that old traditional law and order mentality,
yeah,
and getting into a more enabling culture.
Yes.
Especially when it comes to leadership, especially when it comes to CEOs, to see the company as a toolbox,
yeah,
that enables the CEO, but also the CEO needs to know how to kind of use and enable that toolbox to do the right thing. Why do people struggle so hard with that? Because I would say it's easier to have a whole company supporting me,
mm-hmm,
and being motivated to support me, to see the purpose in supporting the purpose of the company, instead of trying to order people to work for me and to control them and to tell them, you haven't been here for enough time, you need to sit on that desk again for like the next 10 hours or whatever. So why is it so hard? Is it because you can't really control it by numbers, and like at least not in short term?
I think it is, you know, it's very easy. It's one of these things which is very easy in theory and very difficult in real life, because the real life, you have pain in the butt customers and you have a new product that doesn't perform as you would like to have it. And with all these problems comes on that one. Actually, there's a funny word in Danish. The word for CEO is administrative director. And what you will learn, I remember when I first time came CEO, what I learned that I owned all the issues. All the issues were mine. None of the successes were. So if something was successful, it's because that key account or that division did well. I was, when everything was shit, if somebody got sick, if somebody was going to go to a maternity leave, if something, you know, all the issues were you there. And I think that very often you don't, it sounds, this is also so simple, but you don't stop and realize that such is life. You're a CEO, issues are yours, all of them. And then, you know, you get bombarded by these issues. So even the good leaders, they get overwhelmed. We're all human beings. And if we then don't take a time to stop, you know, and you, then what do these people very often do? First of all, very often the top management has a huge capability of work a lot. And, you know, they're like, the fraction of working a lot is huge. Then they try to work it out. They don't go on vacation. They don't take the stop time. You know, they sit literally, you know, you have to take a step back from the woods to see, oh, shit, it's a forest. It's not one tree. And that's a discipline. That's a discipline that if you get out of that training, if you don't stop and think, you just end up taking more responsibility. All the issues are yours. You end up saying, oh, I'm going to help my organization. I'm going to solve them. No way you can do that. You have to push it back to organization with the self-leadership. You have to be there to help and support. But you know, the reality, there's just so much in the reality of this administrative person. I mean, CEO sounds like if you would have some kind of power. No, you actually don't. You just, you're the garbage guy in the company that owns all the garbage. And if your company is doing well, the success is on others. And that's also difficult. I don't think a lot of people understand that that's what being CEO is. CEO is owning the shit cases, and being a division boss or an item boss is owning all the successes. And then that mismatch, just realize that the way, that's why you get paid so much. It's because you are the garbage guy of the company. But you need to stop and realize that and take the step back. You know, when you're in the woods, you don't see there is a whole forest. You just see the bloody one tree you're hitting your head on.
I've seen a lot of companies and a lot of CEOs over the last, let's say, 15 years that have been so focused on reaching short-term goals,
mm-hmm,
short-term, most of all, short-term financial goals,
yeah,
that they took the easiest way out, reducing costs, getting rid of staff, reducing headcount, and trying to squeeze as much as possible from the company. And we do see the results today.
Mm-hmm.
There's lack of innovation. There's a lack of transformation. There's a lack of budget to be invested into R&D and everything. Is there still a way out, like for those, especially those very big corporations that did all those mistakes? Is there a way out to reach long-term success?
Now I'm knowingly saying something which will trick you, but it is, yes, there is more cost cutting. And let me tell you why this. The issue is if you cost cut what we call the slice, you know, the cheese slicing method. If you cost cut 5% everywhere, you end up doing, everybody's just running quicker and they still try to do everything that they did. And then you do the 5% and 5% and 5%. And what actually happens is that you skill trying to do all the things you ever did before with less people, which is leaving to all the things you have. So I think the big difference here is that you have to do, you know, if your things are going bad, I've been in situations where I've been working with a company which was close to a bankrupt for 4 years. I've learned huge, it's one of the most painful, it ended well, but it's one of the most painful things I've done, but it's the most, one of the things I learned most. So a couple of things I learned was really, really, because you had to cut, because literally otherwise you would be out of business. You had to understand, okay, now if I only have these 10 people instead of 50, what do I do with these 10 people that has the biggest effect on the short-term results? Because otherwise I don't have to care if I'm here next year, because, you know, if I don't get this fixed. But this is the issue. If you do a cheese slicer methodology, you're not making the decisions. So one of the things I keep saying, if people are in the stress and they call me, oh, we need to do, you know, business isn't going well, I'm saying, and they say, oh, we're going to cut 5%. I'm saying, no, you never cut 5%. You have to at least cut 10 or 15. And for two reasons. One, then you suddenly realize the cheese cutting methodology doesn't work. You have to say, okay, these guys we must have, but these guys, you know, they can live with less. They have to, because if you are in a tight situation. So that's one thing. The second thing that happens, that when you really dramatically go down on Salesforce or employees, you have to do things differently. If you only do 5%, and that's what I think has been one of the big issues. You do this five cutter slicing method, and they say downwards, we have to have 5%, so and so millions, and it got deployed, and it gets deployed 5%, 3%, this and there. And everybody's happy, oh God, we only lost one person, or, you know, didn't hit us too much. But you don't change the way of working, number one, and you do not decide that that division, go where it goes, until I'm bankrupt, I will keep those 10 people on that one, but that division, I'll take them down to much lower number. So it's about, you know, taking the decision. And I said it on the speech there, it all comes to understanding where the money comes. Let me give you a fantastic example. I love this because I work with retail. And retailers always say, oh, we have, let's say we have 50 stores. And they go, oh, but if I can only lift the 10 lowest performing, I'll be fine. Problem is, if you only have 10 people versus 30, if you're going to spend your people to spend on the bad things, they're not spending good things. So one of the key learnings of that, it was a retail case. We said, okay, we take these 10 people and we only work with our top stores. And the stores which are doing worst, we give them help, little. And either they fix it by themselves, they survive, or they don't. But if I take the best stores and I improve the best stores by 10%, you know, usually they are much higher on this one. So the 10% there will be an absolute money, much better than the 10% of the lowest performing. Of course, it has a size factor also in it. And that just means that, you know, the slice cutter methodology is a lot what we've done since the, you know, since the 08 thing. So we do the slice cutting. The second thing that I'm a big speaker about after 08, that the CFO's got the power in 08. The issue is if CFOs become CEOs, that can work perfectly. Don't get me wrong. It's not that, that's not one of the things don't never do. But the issue is then they will hire more CFOs. And the CFOs can do a lot of things, but they can't grow. They can't innovate. It's not a concept they learn during their career. And unknowingly, because you're a human being, you keep employing people who look like you. So the CFO CEOs take a lot of analytical CFO type of people. And then suddenly you don't have anybody in the organization that's a different type. So it's a sum of a lot of things again. I can't say it's that. Your question was, can we get out of it? Yes, we can. But then it requires that you do some real tough, really terrible situation. You're saying like, and in Germany with the workforce you have, I mean, I was in a German listed company board, you literally have to close the factory. Because, you know, this slice cutting method, and we have this and that, you just have to say. And Germany, it is so devastating because usually you have one employee for one little city. And if you cut that one, the city is dead. But you have to, because the slice, you have to do what's right for the company's long-term survival. The slice cutting method feels good for a short time because you feel you're nice. I get away with relatively little changes. That's the biggest issue. Cut more than you think. Make decisions where you cut. So that's why my initial question for you is, how do you get out of here? Cut more, but not everywhere, but saying that's what we're going to do. you know, we can go to the electric cars and everything. You have to fix it somehow. You just simply have to fix it because there is like no way out if you can't fix it.
So basically do it once, but do it right. Also to kind of build trust in your workforce and to calm them, not calm them down, but to at least give them a sense of reliability and to ensure that they feel safe after that, like the ones that are left and are not of in fear, are afraid of the next cost cut round.
And the issue is that exactly, if you do 5%, 5%, 5%, the only thing you'll probably say, when is the next 5%? And you know, sometimes if you do a bigger one, let's not just call 5 or 15, it can be that you have to do another 15 in 2 years' time because world has not changed or you have not succeeded or whatever. But then you still have, you know, it's more for me, yes, it's for the employee safety. But the other thing is, when you cut enough, you have to work differently. If you do the cheese slice cutter type of thing, you keep working the same way. You try to do everything you did yesterday. And then people get stressed and they get unhappy and all kind of things. Versus where you say, that one, you know, amputate, you know, it is dreadful. But one of my first board positions, it was one of the biggest things. It was dreadful. It was a Swedish company. We decided this company was in deep, deep, deep bad thing. And we had three factories the same way. So one factory has to go. The issue is that we knew whichever factory we pick up, and then was how do we pick that up? That was more about there were some modern less. But we knew that by closing that factory in that village, we basically closed the village. It is one of the most dreadful decisions I have made. But the company existed today. The company has survived. The company is doing fine because we just had to cut one arm off and then, you know, eventually grow the arm back in somewhere else because. And there, the employee representatives were fantastic help. You know, how we took the youngers and we helped them maybe to move and, you know, all the things we did well. It was fantastic to work with the employee representatives because they really helped us on the board to, yes, they understood we have to do this dreadful decision, but then they helped us to do a better decision, the same decision, but a better way.
Would you agree that we also should try to be more brutally honest in those situations when talking to our workforce?
But the issue there is that with very strong workforces where you have for Germany, Germans, Finns, and it's similar there is with Germans specifically, is that I think that what you would need to nearly do is you said, okay, guys, listen, here's the common problem. If we want to survive for like next 5 years or whatever, we need to cut this much. That's the only way. We can't get more money. How would you do that? You know, I talked about self-leadership, throw it to them and saying, we have some suggestions. And then I'm a huge fan of scenario management. So, you know, if they come with this alternative and you come with these alternatives, suddenly you're not talking about, we do this. You're talking about the alternatives and what's bad and forth. And they maybe come with two alternatives. And they always come with the alternative, which is, yes, but not, let's not do that. And everything. No, but listen, the point is we have to find 10 million or 10 billion, whatever we say. And there is ways we can find it, but we need to find one of the other ways. And just by putting these scenarios, but it's not very common. Specifically on the Vorstand way of working, where you have a supervisory board and legal restrictions are different. And when there's so much behind the scenes playing and everything, that you actually dare to bring these ones into that one. But that would be the thing. And then you could do that off the board meeting and saying, okay, let's talk about the scenarios. We're open to these scenarios. And, you know, they will most likely give you two scenarios. They have a third. You will most likely give them two scenarios. You have a third. But at least then you have a four scenarios that you can have an, you know, validated discussion. Why this, why not, and everything, and then you figure out, okay, how we can do. I've been in Germany in situations we did close factory, and it actually came in the end, the employees were saying, listen, guys, we're in deep shit. We need to do something. It's a big company. And then they came saying, listen, we've been really tracking around, but, and then we again moved a lot of people saying, we have to shut that line down, and that requires that we do that one. And then they actually said, if we shut that line down, then we have an ineffective factory. So let's move the final line to another factory and then help people to move if they can. So we're too afraid of involving them. But again, then the issue is that sometimes you have to have another party that is capable of following your analysis. That's not always the case, but it's doable. It's doable.
You are part of the board of a number of companies from different industries. How do you assess for yourself if you want to be part of that company or not? What are also when it comes to leadership culture and to kind of analyzing how that company actually works.
I think one of the things is if I had been only here for made money, I wouldn't have the companies where I am. What I'm trying to make, I like challenges. I like companies in trouble. And it's like, you know, it's like cleaning the windows. You see your own job. You see things happening. If things are doing well, you can find somebody who's better than I am. I am a change person. I believe in the purpose. I get these changes going on and I enjoy it. So I was asked somebody, but aren't you afraid? What if you go belly up? Listen, at least as long as I can look at the mirror and saying I did the best I could, I've learned something. You know, it's, whoa, as long as nobody died. It's one of the things when you work with airline, by the way. It's a very, very simple thing. The first thing you sometimes when people are afraid businesses go bad is saying, did anybody die? No, all our passengers survived. So let's talk. We're fine. And then next topic. So, you know, like the safety on that side. And it's great because then people concentrate back on what's actually doing well. We're doing well, we're safety, we're all kind of, yes, we have an issue with the business. Let's talk about that one. But it's in that sense, I think when I go and choose the things, I like there to be a challenge. I've done a lot of turnarounds. You know, when we talked about cut 5, cut 10, you know, I kind of have a book. I know what to do with them. I know that there's big things. I'm a huge believer in purpose. Let's talk about purpose. I believe that strategy has to be a one-pager. If it's not in one-pager, if your cleaning lady in the office cannot figure out your strategy, you don't have a strategy. You have some kind of blah, blah. So I think also that one, and I like the energy. I don't differentiate between negative and positive energy. I just seen that in the change, there is an energy. And then there is a very blunt thing, which somebody said to me, and I don't know if that's true or not, but I think that because I've done some really difficult cases, I've got to do cases which bear above my knowledge on that point of time earlier in my career. You know, because, you know, there's a lot of people, I don't want to take that. That's a possible shit case. And I'm crazy enough of saying, oh, interesting, fascinating. And if I then I do make an analysis. You know, I don't, if I see, listen, that is a shit case and there is, you know, it's going to be closed in 6 months time, then I don't necessarily touch it. But if it is like, you know, I do a quick analysis, look at the financials, oh, you know, there's too much fat, I can still do it. If I can very quickly do an analysis, so it's based on analysis that there is a possibility we can, not wishful thinking, not saying we have to reinvent the wheel, get a new innovation, but can we get the base business turned around? Does the financials look the way I can get the base? Can I create enough time to turn around the company? Because sometimes, you know, companies don't go busted because their bottom line disappears. They go busted because they don't have the cash. So, you know, you have to do the analysis. But then I like challenges. There's some which are just pure growth challenges, and there's some which are turnarounds. There's some which have another challenges, you know, technology challenge. Technology challenge is actually one of the worst things to take because you have a legacy model and you know you have shit, but you don't have the solution. That's actually one of the most difficult ones. But what I do is I see if there's a challenge. I like challenges. And then for me, that's one thing. The second thing is to understand the business. So manageable challenge, to understand the business. Most of my business are consumer. They are B2B2C or B2C. So do I have something to contribute? Very much, very big question to ask. And then, you know, with the portfolio I have, it's a very more often, can I do it at all? And I said that I have to have a feeling I want to do this rather than not wanting to do it. And then that's the way of doing. But there has to be something I haven't done before. There is this, I'm in a lucky position that I can sometimes boost those ones. So, no.
If there is a young talent listening, mm-hmm. Thinking about or aiming to become a leader and doing good stuff and working for an innovative company and so on, what would be your most important advice?
It's a bit difficult. First of all, I say you spend most of your wake time working. You don't spend it with your kids. You don't spend it with your partners. You have to have, let's go back on the fun thing, but you have to enjoy what you're doing. And that does not mean that, oh, but I don't like that product. I can't work. You have to find the sparkle in that job. And the time you can't not anymore find the sparkle, time to move. So I think one of these things is there the energy, the sparkle? You know, it could be negative energy, positive energy, whatever. You have to have the sparkle. So go in for that one. I do not tell people to go where their hobby is or where their heart is. I don't think that's the right way of doing it. I think it's a right way. It's more about do as good as you can, whatever you're doing at the moment, and you will be much more happier because you're putting your best. The worst thing is to have a job and you go there and do it 60%. It's going to drain you out. So that's one thing. The second thing that I'm actually saying, and this is something I'm slightly worried with this AI world now, is that you need to be analytical. You need to do some analysis. It doesn't mean you have to be a mathematician or you know, you have to do a statistics, but simple do of analysis. And that's not difficult, but you have to stop and do the analysis. I always say, where's the money made? Wait, how can I do that? I love what the entrepreneurs sometimes say is, okay, who's going to buy your product three times? If you can't have enough to can buy your product three times, why would you? And it's consumer thinking. Or then you have to have somebody who buys it one, but they have a subscription model, which means they're stuck with you. It's so big thing. But you have to think this kind of repeatability, scalability. So it's not one thing. But so I think it's about put your heart in what you're doing. If you can't do that, move on. I'm sure you have some analytical mind on that one. And then I talked a lot about focus. I have three kids between 20 and 30. And I see how much they are struggling with all the opportunities there are, you know, and we stupidly older generations say, but you have all the opportunities. That's exactly the issue. You have to close some doors to be able to, you know, if you keep all the doors open, you're standing in the room and you're not moving. You have to close some doors to move through the door. So don't be afraid of making choices. You can redo that choice later. I think that's one of the big things that, you know, when I jumped out of my day-to-day CEO job and became a full-time board member, I was so sure I'm making career suicide. And yes, I did. I never became a CEO anymore, but that was not the point. I had a discussion with a friend and I just said this way. And she said, what's the worst thing can happen to you? What you have done is not going to be taken away from you. So worst thing happened, you try it, you don't like it, you're not successful. Then you go and get a new job. And yes, you maybe did the career this way, but you try it. We're too afraid of trying, but you have to do the analysis because otherwise you jump in stupid things. And that's not smart, but do the analysis and then dare to jump.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening. Did you enjoy the episode? Follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you prefer listening to your favorite podcast shows. Forward Thinkers is a 48 Forward podcast produced in the 48 Forward Studios in Munich.